And welcome our TSN hockey insider, Dave Poulin, to the show this morning. How are you doing this morning, Dave?
Very well, JR. Michaela, you know, I think an NHL coach's voice is very much like an early morning radio analyst guest. And you wake up in a city and you're not quite sure what your voice is going to be doing yet. And so you're the first test for my voice this morning.
Okay.
It's not quite DJ Smith level, but I think that's part coach stress, part coach worry, part coach. That's inherent with a coach. He never knows what voice he's going to wake up with in the morning. He goes with what he has.
Yeah. For those who watched you play and then have now watched you on TV, you seem like a very level-headed individual. Was when Dave Poulin was the head coach of Notre Dame for, what, the better part of a decade, was Dave Poulin a yeller behind the bench? Like, was Dave Poulin, I lost my voice at the end of the game, I was barking too much? Or are you as calm and cool as you appear on TV and here on the radio?
I think a little bit of everything. It was the hardest job I've done in hockey. It was the most personal job. It never left you. I did it for 10 years. And I was very it was my alma mater, and we managed to rebuild the program. It was really down and out when I got there. But my first problem, JR, was I wanted to coach the players like I wanted to be coached. Now, the problem with that is my players were somewhere between 18 and 23 years old, and I was a 37-year-old pro who knew how to be coached, and you couldn't coach them the same way. And so, you know, I took that job 2 days after retirement, so I had no training at all. I had never coached at any level, and all of a sudden I was the head coach. And it was an incredibly challenging job that sort of rounded me out for everything else I did, because it keeps getting easier after coaching. I'll tell you what, it is a incredibly hard job, and I think that gets lost on people on how critical they are of coaching. There are so many different factors in being a head coach, and albeit at a different level, the NCAA Division I level, but the things that DJ Smith would deal with on an everyday basis don't stop, and they don't stop when he leaves the rink, and they don't stop when he's driving home in the car. They're constantly there in his head. So, and it's a tough time for him right now, and you know, he's trying to digest what this team is at a very, very difficult time, but he factors that in as well, and he's looking for positives. I've always been an incredibly positive person because that's my choice, and I'm looking for what I can pull out of this team, for what I can determine about this team through this time. The record's exactly the same as it was last year at this time. Exactly the same. Going into Winnipeg on a Saturday night, and they won a big game, and that turned the season around in many ways. So, you know, where are the players who finished the season 10-3-1? And I'd throw that target out there right now, because they went on that roll after that 4-12-1 start. They went on a roll basically for the rest of the year up through the 56 game mark. So put that out there as a target. You guys think you're better, and individually you think you're better. Drake Batherson thinks he's a better player. Josh Norris thinks he's a better player. Brady Tkachuk thinks he's a better player. Timmy Stutz is looking, well, I'm way better than I was last year, just because I get it more. I'm older, and I'm only 20 years, but I'm older. And so put that challenge out there to those players right now. And really, for DJ Smith, it's about figuring out what he has in that locker room and on that ice.
As you can imagine, Dave, there's criticism of everybody here in Ottawa, you know, from players to general manager to the coach, for sure. And as you said, when you took over as an NCAA coach, it is a you got to learn how to coach. And DJ Smith is learning how to coach at the NHL level. And whether it turns out to be a success or not, that's to be determined. But it's interesting, on the other bench this afternoon with Anaheim is Dallas Eakins, who went to Edmonton and kind of went in with some interesting ideas, I think, that were a little bit different, and it didn't work. He ended up getting fired, ended up going back to the minors, and now it would appear, and I think this is his third year in Anaheim, they're playing pretty good hockey right now. Like, sort of take us through the process of learning how to be a head coach, especially coming from, like DJ Smith, you know, the junior hockey level, and then as an assistant, and becoming an NHL head coach.
Well, you're talking about someone I know very well, and I worked with Dallas, you know, for 4 years with the Toronto Marlies. I was the general manager, so I had him firsthand. So I grew with a young Dallas Eakins as a head coach, and you know, and kept in touch with him throughout. And certainly, it is a process, but a large part is the team that you have and the expectations that are there. And DJ Smith came in at a time when, you know, the team was pretty beaten up and on the rebound. And at each step, he wants to be so positive, and yet he still has to continue to coach. And there are times when you have to say no. You're looking at a young player. Like, how many times do you think Tim Stützle was said no to before he arrived with the Ottawa Senators? You know, the young stars, they've been said yes to all the way along because they're the best. And so now, for the first time, somebody's saying to them, no, you're not doing it that way. And it's an incredibly harsh awakening for some of these young players. And that's part of the process. But I think it's really about working very, very closely. You know, Dallas Aikens and I had a great relationship. We talked through everything. And it, so when decisions were made, it wasn't a surprise to either one of us. If he was sitting someone, it wasn't a surprise to me. If I was, you know, promoting someone, it wasn't a surprise to him. It was all part of the conversation. The conversation is so critical between the coach and the manager at this stage. And we grew that Marlies team into a good team, and we went to the championships, and we lost to John Cooper's team when he was in Norfolk, that, you know, that had Tyler Johnson and Palat and Panic and that whole group that went on to be, you know, very successful Tampa Bay Lightning. And I watched the growth of Dallas, and I watched him through Edmonton, and then I watched him go back to San Diego and grow again. So there's no defined time on it, even with Anaheim, who is expecting this success this year. And he's got a young group, and he's off to a great start, and arguably doing a lot of the same things he was doing or tried in Edmonton. And they're working now, and he's discarded the ones that weren't. So, but for DJ, it's about learning his players to the nth degree. It's about finding out who can do what. And, you know, who can, if you can survive in this environment, is it any surprise that Connor Brown has emerged coming out of this? I mean, he's played 23 minutes each of the first two nights, and you're coming out of pandemic. He was, you know, he was down and out the whole time, and yet he's one of the ones who's playing really well right now. But that's not a surprise to us, and it's probably not a surprise to DJ. That's why he's playing him 23 minutes a night. And, you know, he's got to figure out with the other guys who can elevate through these tough times.
Just to kind of build on that, Dave, you mentioned on the TSN broadcast that some of the young players on Ottawa may not be completely ready at this point. What do you think the solution there is? Does it mean more AHL time for some of them, or is that something that could be addressed at the coaching level?
Kayla, I think that's very individual. I really do. And, you know, it's been successful to have players in the minors, but, you know, when you look at Norris and Batherson and that group, Formanton, they were all together down there. And they were all growing together down there. And so to say right now, okay, take one of those players and say, we think he needs more time in Belleville. Well, if you put him down there right now, he wouldn't have those three or four other guys to grow with. And the growth pattern would be very different. And so maybe for those players now, as they're together, it's more important for them to grow at the NHL level. And they've had success at the American Hockey League level. But it really, really is individual for each and every player and to how they develop. And when I commented on that, I really meant between the D and, you know, when Pierre Dorion said the rebuild is over, in his mind, he's sitting with his group, with Peter McTavish at that point, and they're sitting and they're analyzing everything, and they really like the pieces they've assembled. But the pieces include Jake Sanderson. Well, he's not here right now. and potentially Tyler Clevens. Well, he's not here right now. You know, and potentially Jacob Bernard Docker. Well, he's not here right now because he's not ready. And so when you say the pieces, you know, we love the pieces we have, all the pieces aren't at the same growth phase. They're simply not. And, you know, Jake Sanderson isn't at the same place Brady Tkachuk is at. He's not. He's a few years behind him. And I think he's going to be a really good player. And I think he's going to be a really good NHL player. And of the young players that I've watched that have gone back and played a second year of college recently, Cale Makar and Quinn Hughes being two of them, look at how, when they arrived, they weren't going anywhere. They were ready to play. And I think Jake Sanderson is on that curve. And that's high praise, I know, for a player that hasn't played in the NHL yet. But he's not ready yet. But when your forwards are ready, you know, you're playing them, and you've put some players in place on the defensive side who you thought could buy you some time. And it hasn't worked out. They haven't gelled as a group. It simply hasn't. And they've tried some of the young ones. Lassie Thompson looks like he has taken advantage of the situation now. But it's just going to be a continued process. And all of a sudden, one day, and it may be a year from now, it may be a year and a half from now, you're going to say, okay, now You know, now it looks like the defense has caught up to the forwards.
They were reluctant to move Tim Stützle into the middle. They did it. It may have been by circumstance. It may have been through desperation, whatever it was. He played there the other night, and by all accounts, including from the coach, performed well. He's going to be back at center ice for the game today. Do you think there's a chance he's there, Dave, for good?
It could be. I mean, you know, for good, it depends on who lines up there. I mean, you know, I'm a big Shane Pinto fan. What is he, you know, if he's a third line center, then you're a really good team. You know, if your top two line centers are end up being Norris and Stützle, and you can balance out your forwards like that, and it's going to be on what pieces fit with which. And Drake Batherson right now isn't factoring into this equation. You know, I think he may look good with Timmy Stützle at center. And you know, and then figure out the top line with Norris and Tkachuk and figure out, you know, how that pieces together. But I think the fun of putting these pieces together, Stützle looked very comfortable to me, and he only took four faceoffs. Nick Paul took the majority of the draws, and that's fine. But it seemed like they thought about, you know, the transfers from who's back and who's up. But it looked to me like he was skating more freely. And just, you know, he'd feel at center that he had more space, that you have two options. You can go left or right. You know, it's not like you're a left winger and you turn left and hit the boards. And so it looked like he was just, in his mind, he was more freer. And, you know, now it's about putting the combinations together. And when you look around the league, there's some teams that are further along the curve, JR, that still haven't figured out their forward lines. And I put Winnipeg in that category. You know, their pieces have really elevated. If you look at Pierre-Luc Dubois and Kyle Connor, you know, who have really elevated, Andrew Kopp has elevated. But now how exactly do they fit together with Scheifele and Wheeler and Ehlers? And that's a process for them, and they're a much more mature team. So I think it's about finding, and it may be in pairs. I always kind of liked working in pairs rather than threes, and, you know, putting two guys together and then figuring out who works best with them. So I like Stützle at center. I think it's a good start, and, you know, it'll be up to him on whether he stays there or not. But if you have the luxury of playing a young talent like Shane Pinto in a third-line team, yeah, boy, oh boy, that could be a pretty good combination.
Goaltending has definitely been a topic of conversation around here, Dave. And, you know, with Matt Murray a year and a half into his time here in Ottawa and really hasn't been able to find his groove and turn things around, how would you address the goaltending situation? Do you think a trade is even possible, or is this a, you know, work with what you've got and try to turn things around?
I think you work with what you have right now, Michaela. And you know, Matt Murray hasn't done what he did in Pittsburgh, and he's not playing behind the same team he was in Pittsburgh. And, you know, they determined that he was a guy who could come in and solidify things, and he hasn't to the level that they wanted him to. But contractually, cap-wise, everything else, you've got to play this out. And you've got to play it out, and arguably through next year, and really see what you have and see if he is going to be the guy. I think you're in excellent shape with Philip Gustafson, and I think that's emerged through this. So if that's your combination, because cap-wise, it doesn't matter what his hit is right now because it's not affecting the rest of your team. You're not a cap-strapped team. So I would really look at this as a long-term, you know, potentially the full this season and next season to see what you have. Someone in the organization loves Matt Murray and thinks he's the guy. That's why the trade was made. It may be the scouting group. It may be the GM. It may be some different part of management. And so you've got to see if there's are reasons why that player hasn't developed back to what he was. And a large part of it, quite frankly, is that, you know, the defensive core in front of him isn't what it was at its best when it was in Pittsburgh. You know, they won two Stanley Cups. It was a pretty good defensive team there. And so I think you're okay in that you've got Philip Gustafson, who's emerging, and I think he could be a really solid guy. But you're at the cap advantage point now. I think you just play this out and push. You know, the goaltending position is such an interesting one because it's so, so critical. And when Mike Keenan was hired as a young coach, his first NHL job with the Philadelphia Flyers, he met with each of us individually. And I can remember walking into to a pancake shop in South Jersey. And he shook my hand. I'm not even sure he said hello. And he said, do we have a goalie that can win the Stanley Cup? It was the absolute first question he asked me. And I remember looking at him and saying, hi, I'm Dave. Like, you know, I wear number 20 and I'm a centerman. But no, there was no formalities. There was no smile. There was, do we have a goalie that can win the Stanley Cup? That's what he decided as an NHL coach, that his first question was going to be, you know, to someone who, and I'd only played in the league 1 year. And it was the very first question he posed. Mm. And I answered yes. And I think I was right, because we had Pelle Lindbergh, and, you know, and we didn't win a Stanley Cup with him, but we made a heck of a run with him. And that's the critical piece of the equation, is whether this is the guy that is going to be there. And that question is unanswered right now. And you say that, Matt Murray's, you know, been a part of a couple of Cup teams, but can he do it, and can he be a different factor than he's been so far in Ottawa? That's still to be determined.
You brought up Jake Sanderson's name earlier, and whenever it is that he joins the Sens, probably at the end of this collegiate season, the expectations are so high for this guy in this market today for him to step in and just be all world to begin with, and he may never be able to live up to that, or at least initially. Regardless, when the pick was made to choose him as the first defenseman in that draft to go, it was one pick ahead of Jamie Drysdale, and outside of Ottawa, there's still a lot of people that think that Drysdale will be the better choice. I won't ask you to pick who's going to be the better player, but as you've watched Jamie Drysdale in his year and a half in the NHL, what are your thoughts on him as a player?
Well, he's just a great skater. He's a great skater, and he's gotten comfortable very, very quickly. And, you know, he's a player that basically had no place to play, so they put him in the American Hockey League, and then they said, okay, well, he's really good in the American Hockey League, and they elevated him in the NHL. Those decisions wouldn't have been made had junior hockey been available. And it's kind of strange to say your development was that affected by, you know, the circumstances of the pandemic, but he might be the single player who's benefited the most by that. And just the exception that has stepped in, but great, great skater. I think it's going to be a comparison, and hopefully you make this comparison for years to come. You know, picked consecutively in the draft, and, you know, wouldn't it be great if you said, boy, these two guys are vying, you know, each year to be the top defenseman, not only on their team, but, you know, in the league. And it's a Makar Hughes situation, and hopefully we'll see the same thing out of Drysdale and Sanderson.
There's nothing against both of them being great hockey players, right? It's almost like we always have to be, it's either or. There can never, you know, it's a right or a wrong. It's never, hey, they're both just really good. It may come down to, it's just one guy's a left shot, and, you know, there's always the right shot defenseman, right? Is that piece that everybody likes to add, and Drysdale being a right shot, maybe that's a small difference between the two. But you're absolutely right. It's going to be a great debate that we're going to watch, hopefully play out in the seasons to come. All right, Dave, really appreciate the time as always and the visits this week. Look forward to chatting with you again on Monday.
Have a great weekend. Thanks.